Welcome again to Green Livelihood, Right Livelihood, the Indo Verde A. This is Dan Curvine. I'm here with Evelina Molina, co-hosting together the program. And for those of you, you may have heard the introduction to this interview in our prior podcast. And what we are doing now is getting into more depth with Mr. Omar Freya, who is the director of Green Worker Cooperatives, a community-based organization dedicated to setting up worker-owned green businesses in the South Bronx. And what I want to do with you starting off, Omar, is get some background here on just how did this come about, where you saw the need, what in your experience just got you passionate about this?
Well, I would say what comes to mind immediately was that I grew up in the South Bronx, and I remember from very young, growing up and thinking at 10 years old that the community that I lived in was an abandoned community. And I don't just mean physically abandoned, like seeing abandoned buildings, because that is what I grew up with. But I remember thinking then that the city government had forgotten about us, that buildings were allowed to go decay, and that the city was spending money in ways that were about covering up the problems for commuters. Now, remember standing and looking at the apartment buildings that were vacant in my community and seeing how the city had drawn or put up murals on the windows to make it look to drivers passing by on the highway that there were people living in them, but in reality, people were not.
And that's bizarre.
Yeah. Well, it's bizarre to someone who's, you know, is like me at the time, wondering why in the world would this be the case, and then, you know, just quickly realizing, even at 10 years old, you're not oblivious to what's going on around you. And remember thinking that, you know, we were just a community that they didn't care. They didn't care about us. And that was the thought that went through my head at the time. And since then, I have been of the mindset or always leaned towards things that were about building our own strength and our own sense of self-determination. And when I say our, I'm talking about whatever community that I'm in, and particularly people of color and low-income communities, and because that's the community that I came from. And so the concept of self-determination and any community being able to provide for its own needs is one that resonates strongly with me. And it's something that is a central piece of the cooperative movement, of cooperatives, and of people, wherever they are, whether they're as coming together as consumers or they're coming together as workers, but they're coming together to meet their own needs and to support each other in doing that. And that is something that it's a legacy of the South Bronx, a legacy of the Bronx in general, where this was an area that had been abandoned for a long time. The city had actually had an active policy of cutting down on city services in poor communities like the South Bronx and directing them towards the communities that were wealthier and also whiter. And that was very much a reality of the time during the 1970s when the city was going through its own, city and the country were going through their own crisis. Fiscal crisis. So this the idea that people are able to come together and develop their own resources and grow them and meet their own needs is one that has always resonated with me, and that's been my interest, the source of my interest in cooperatives. More recently, and the idea for green worker cooperatives had come about as a result of efforts sometime in the early 2000s, when myself working through various community organizations, environmental justice organizations, in collaboration with labor unions and some others, had really been active in what has since become the Green Jobs movement. And this was, I'm talking our early 2000s when nobody was really talking about green jobs. Many of us on the ground here in New York, and similarly in other parts of the country, had been saying, well, you know, we live in these communities, we want jobs, we just don't want jobs that kill us. We want to have jobs that are actually about promoting life in the community and that are moving in a different direction. They're not gray, they're green. And so what we were talking about then was let's try to attract some green businesses. And so there was an effort to do that. I wasn't really too happy or just comfortable with just doing that. I've always felt that, you know, if something is going to be created and if some enterprise is going to be started up in a community, then it should really be benefiting the community most.
Right.
And it should be homegrown. And if there's ever an opportunity to do something, have a homegrown industry develop, then that's the direction, that's the best direction for any community to be moving in, because it really locks the resources of that industry or that enterprise, whatever it is, deep within that community, and really helps it to create roots, so it's harder to get up and go
at whim.
So that was really the source of what is now Green Worker Cooperatives.
And I can see why that would ignite some passion in somebody who's been seeing that for so long. Now, how long did the process take? I mean, did it catch on right away with people? Did it take some organizing? Was it something that resonated immediately? Was there resistance you ran into? How has that process been?
Well, you know, it's pretty interesting. The idea of worker-owned businesses and having them be green is not one that I found any resistance to on the ground, and I mean locally, within our community. The resistance tends to come, I'm talking within a community, the resistance tends to come just normally from the fear of starting something new. And that is, and I'm talking about, I'm approaching someone and says, you know, this is what we do. We help people to start up businesses. Or you're thinking about starting up a business. Very few people are actually in a space where they want to start up their own business or start up a new business.
Right.
It's not something that is taught. It's not something that's really culturally promoted. It's not promoted, and I mean culturally, I'm talking about in the larger U.S. culture. It's not something that is really promoted as something for anyone to be able to do. There is a mystique around entrepreneurship, and most people who go to school, wherever they are taught to be employees. We're not taught to be owners of industries. So it's not a direction that people tend to be promoted towards or geared towards. So really being able to find the people who are actually in a space where they want to start up a business is really an important piece. And fortunately, we've been able we've been around long enough where people now know about the work, and many community organizations in particular know about the work and are sending people to us, or are thinking now about how to develop cooperatives and have an interest in starting up worker cooperatives. So that's it's a welcome change that we've seen over the years, and it's really more a matter of breaking down that resistance, and breaking down the resistance comes from people being able to actually see it and being able to see it in operation. So we started by starting up our own cooperative, our first business. Was one that we had come up with the idea. We started it. It was a salvage store for building materials, and they basically went around to different construction sites or homes and picked up material that would have otherwise been thrown away. Perfectly good condition, perfectly wonderful stuff. I'm talking sinks and tiles and flooring, lighting fixtures, windows, cabinetry, everything that would basically be pulled out of a home or pulled out of an office, they would bring to their space, fix it up, if it even needed fixing, and then make it available. And that was an industry, then people would walk in, they'd see it and say, oh, well, this is a worker co-op, what is that? And so we'd get wind up having conversations, and then more and more interest has grown since then. So as a result, then we've had a number of people and people organizations throughout the Bronx and around the country who've then been approaching us and say, you know, we're interested in starting up a worker co-op. How do we do it? And so that's brought us to a point now where we have actually created a training program to really help people, support people in that process of coming up with their own idea and having them move through the steps of doing the research and figuring out everything that they need that would normally go into a business plan, and then actually starting up the business and getting it up and running. So that's our focus, and it's really what we're about, because we want to see worker-owned businesses that are green all throughout the South Bronx, all throughout the Bronx. And certainly we want to see them throughout the country. And our way of doing that is really focusing on the community that we're in and then helping and supporting others in other places to do the same. And it's a way that we feel it's a necessary approach, because there's very little infrastructure and very little support out there for people who want to set up businesses in a way that deviates from the traditional business structure. Anyone who wants to set up a business as a worker co-op or any other kind of cooperative really has to do a lot of research and a lot of their own digging in order to be able to find other people who are doing this or who've done it, and find material out there that's written. There are things out there, but you really need to go looking for it. And so we see ourselves as really filling a niche, filling an important need, which is laying that foundation of knowledge and support to be able to usher in a new kind of economy.
Great, and you're listening to Omar Frieya, who is the director of the Green Worker Co-op here on Green Livelihood, Right Livelihood, Viviendo Verde Ya. And Omar, and your hosts here are Evelina Molina and Dan Kerbine. Can you tell us, can you describe just a general overview of the population, the people that are coming? Are they local people from that neighborhood? Are they from out of town? And maybe you can tell us, just give us an overview of what the process is like. You know, I got this idea and I come to you. What do I have to do to be in your program?
And
what, let's just say, what would you say are the top three challenges that you have found as you're starting and developing this process?
Sure. Most of the people who come to us and most of the people who participate in a Co-op Academy program are from the Bronx. We do accept a few people from outside of the Bronx, and we do keep the focus and aim to keep the focus on the Bronx, but we do accept people who are from other parts of the Bronx. Our intent is to really support the development of green worker-owned businesses in the Bronx, so we certainly prioritize and hold central people who are starting businesses that are going to be based in the Bronx. So even if you've got half of your team or most of your team are not from the Bronx, if the intention is to set up a business in the South Bronx, and we would be all in support of that. So that's our focus. The Bronx itself is primarily people of color, of that primarily Latinos and African Americans, as well as people of African descent from other parts of the Americas as well. Not just Spanish-speaking or African-American. But that's the demographics of our community and our focus. As far as what are the difficulties or what are the challenges that we've seen, there are some pretty important ones, some pretty big ones. Certainly, the concept of having a strong business team is central, more so than anything else, I would say, is that you've got the right people from the very beginning who are actually engaged in the business, because even if it's a, it could be a great, wonderful idea, you could have all the money in the world, but if you don't have the right team, then, and by the right team, I mean people with the right right mix of background, knowledge of the industry, knowledge of the field, a particular attitude that is about being able to sacrifice and get things going from the very beginning, then that business is really going to be handicapped. And while we are talking about worker-owned businesses or worker cooperatives that have a very different kind of a business structure that is about putting people first and keeping wealth in the community, it is still a business, and it has to operate along principles that are about being able to sustain itself. So that is, it's really central that the right team has to be there, that you've got people with the right mix of work experience and fortitude to be able to run with this thing from the very beginning. So that is central, and I, put lots of exclamation marks around that. And certainly beyond that, it's a cooperative, and this is about people coming together and making decisions together. So if you've got a team of people who really have a rough time, each one making decisions not compromising, but really making decisions with other people and listening to where other people are coming from, putting themselves in other people's positions, and really talking things out, then it's going to be very difficult for that person or that group of people to be able to come to any kind of a consensus or come to a decision together. And really being able to come to a decision is a central piece of any cooperative, because you're talking about a group of people coming together and planning on moving ahead. And so they've got to be able to talk it out and figure out what the path is going to be. So it's not for everyone. It's certainly not for everyone. It requires a certain amount of give and take, a certain amount of giving up of the ego, and that is certainly something that within our culture is not fully embraced and is not widely promoted. And within the United States, I'm talking here, that it's not something that's widely promoted, though certainly people everywhere do it, and we have to do it, and we have to work with each other in order to get anything done. So it certainly happens, but it's the kind of thing that it's like a muscle that if you don't flex it, it's not going to be exercised, and you're not really going to be able to develop it. And the more we get in the practice from very young of really being able to be good listeners and talking things out without getting upset, then the more we do that, the more experience we become in doing that. And that's not to say that someone who's been abusive can't be in a cooperative. I've seen people who have a history of abuse in their homes and who are abusive to other people come into a worker cooperative and move from the point of being someone who would storm out of a room or bang out a wall to winding up actually being able to sit down and have a direct conversation with someone where they're just listening as someone is saying to them all of the concerns and whatever it is that they have done that has upset someone else without blowing up. And that's huge. And that's for someone to be able to go through that, and I'm talking within a span of a few months, then it's something that has been really, it's moving. It's moving for that person, it moves their entire life.
Mm-hmm.
And it has, and it's been amazing just to see that kind of transition. Go ahead.
I was just going to say that one of the things that we have experienced with our cooperative endeavors is that when a person is accountable to their peers in a group, there is a different level of, interaction. And there's almost a different level of respect versus having a super high power one person employer or manager. There's something about being accountable to a group in which your voice matters. I think for our students changes the dynamics. And what they've told me is that they work and try to do their best because they don't want to let their peers down. Versus having an employer, it's like they don't really care because usually they feel more exploited than anything. But I want to ask you, can you tell us what are the age population, male, female, are there both? And why co-ops? I mean, I understand that there was a time, I mean, in Berkeley there's cooperatives that have been there, in UC Davis, and yet for some reason I feel like nothing's really progressed even though those co-ops have been there 30, 40 years. So what's up with that?
Well, to answer your first question, I'd say there's an even split in the proportion of men and women who have taken our co-op academy. And so, you know, half men, half women, roughly. So, you know, it's really open to anyone that's out there who has an idea for a business and wants to help it get it off the ground. Why co-ops? It's a critical question. We are huge fans of cooperatives, in particular worker ownership, because we see it as a way to create an economy that is based on putting people first, that is really about holding businesses accountable by the community, by communities that they're located in, by the workers that are actually working there, that it is about creating in a direct infrastructure in our economy that holds economic institutions accountable to the communities that they operate in. And that is something that is very visible within a cooperative, because the people who are actually within a worker cooperative, because the people who are actually own the business are the ones who work there, who more than likely are also going to be living within the community. So what we've been living with for now, all of us, wherever we are, is we're living with industries, whether they're toxic industries or whether they're big box stores. We're living with industries that have incredible impacts on our community, that have no accountability to the communities that they're located in. They have no accountability to the workers who work there. So companies are polluting with impunity and have incredible coffers to be able to engage in lobbying that allows them to walk scot-free. So our only current levers to be able to hold industries accountable are our governments, which, you know, it would be laughable if they were actually holding those industries accountable the way that they need to be. So really, none of us really have the levers that are really needed in order to be able to hold these industries accountable. So worker cooperatives are actually a way to create a direct means of accountability for directly between the communities of the workers and the industries that are operating there. So that's why we're big. That's a main reason why we're big fans of worker ownership and cooperatives in general, because of that means of accountability. And beyond that, it's on a much bigger scale. You know, we live in a country that purports to be a model of democracy. And certainly there are freedoms of the press that exist more so on paper than in reality in some cases. But while much of the world has an image of the United States as this model of democracy, on a day-to-day basis, most of us do not engage in democratic practice. We don't actually experience democracy. You know, we know democracy to be an act that we engage in every 4 years or every 2 years, depending on a local or a national election. But beyond that, in our day-to-day encounters, our week-to-week or month-to-month encounters, we don't actually engage or experience democracy. So creating institutions that are imbued with democratic practice is a way of making that real. And that I would say would be the next stage of our evolution as a society, is to be able to take those ideals that have been on paper for so long and we think of through an electoral exercise every few years, to making it be something that is actually lived and breathed each and every single day. And doing that is something that not only not only occurs within that space of a workplace where I have a decision-making ability because I work there and I'm an owner, but it translates to every piece of our lives. So if I'm someone who has learned all their lives to be an employee, to follow orders, to listen, do as they're told, and now they're put into a context where they're an owner and they have a say in a business, and they're required, and it's an obligation now for them to actually be involved. They're going to grow into that role because the space is there for them to grow into it. So they're going to grow into that role, and it's going to have repercussions outside of that business, outside of that workplace. They're going to be someone now who at home is someone who stands up for their rights and is involved in making decisions with other people, and they're not going to shy away from it. And that's something that, you know, anybody who's engaged in community organizing sees that regularly. You've got people who have been used to being forgotten about, engaged in a campaign to whether it's improve their school or get a street light on a corner or stop violence in a community, whatever it is. They see a victory. They're engaged in an activity, and then there's a win. That person grows, and they grow in their expectations, and that's the biggest thing that for us that we can expect that we can imagine and see in people is that people grow in their expectations about what's possible.
Omar, and you know, can, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I would just say, we're basically creating an economy that allows people to grow in their expectations about what's possible.
Great. Omar, we see now that the Republicans have taken over the House, that there is a major attack on the public union, the unions in the public service sector, and we already have seen what has happened since the Reagan times, that unions are pretty much all but gone, and those that do exist are just hanging on by a thread. I'm just wondering, from your perspective, when we're talking, I see this as a form of organized labor, except we're organizing, you could say, from the grassroots. I'm just wondering if you put those two, the demise of unions and the dysfunction, because unions are great, but they're not perfect. And they really have done a lot for workers, but they don't deal with a lot of the democratic issues. What is your perspective on where unions are going, the history of unions, and this little life, little green coming up in worker cooperatives?
Certainly all of us owe unions a great deal. We wouldn't have the weekend. We wouldn't have our weekends if there weren't unions. And so certainly the labor, organized labor movement has been central to creating the space for pretty much most movements that we know of today. And, you know, today when we look at the state of the labor movement, where activities are, there's a lot that's happening, a great deal that is happening outside of organized labor or the traditional confines of organized labor. So there's an incredible amount of organizing work that has been happening with the traditionally unorganized sectors. So whether it's domestic workers or unorganized restaurant workers or restaurant workers who are not in unions and low-wage workers, day laborers, there's an incredible amount that's happening, and it's being led by many, many community-based organizations or worker centers that are out there. So what I think that when we look today at the state of the labor movement, a lot of the most exciting things are happening outside of the traditional union halls. And these are the places where we should really be looking for that the next thing, the next wave of activity. And I certainly see the cooperative movement, the worker cooperative movement, I should say in particular, as one of those spaces where there are more and more, particularly as the economy has continued to go on the decline, and more people are being forced out of paid work or working as employees, many people are considering what are some other options. You know, there are certainly there are people now who are considering going into work for themselves, going into business for themselves, once they have been booted out of a particular their particular industry. And others who are considering, well, what are some other options? And people who have been looking at the state of their communities and seeing them on the decline are saying now, well, you know, the story we've been fed isn't working. You know, we've been told to train for jobs, but the jobs aren't there for people that we train. So what do they do now? Where do they go? So that's where, you know, how we address that, how we address that collectively is essential to where the next, where we go as a group and as a society. And so certainly more people are now looking favorably upon anything that's out there. And worker co-ops, worker-owned businesses, are one of those lights that are that is gaining a lot of attention as a result. And so even, you know, in past movies that have just questioned the existence, the structure of our economy, Michael Moore's movie on capitalism, you know, is a great example of that, which actually highlighted worker co-ops that are around the country.
One right that's a few miles from where I live, which is the Alvarado Street Bakery.
Oh, yeah. Excellent. An excellent bakery, makes great food. And just another example of the kinds of industries that are out there and that are possible that people, you know, typically think of as a traditional business with one owner and don't really have models of ways of seeing that with another kind of structure. Alvarado Street Bakery is a great example. And you've got tons of worker co-ops in the Bay Area that have a long history and some that are fairly new that are some great examples of worker-owned businesses that are successful. And it's a large concentration of them in the Bay Area. I wish we had as many worker-owned businesses in New York City as you've got out in the Bay.
Omar, how long has the Green Worker Cooperatives organization been in existence for you to be accomplishing what you have been?
Well, we've gone through a few incarnations. We've been around now for about 7 years, and most of that time, our effort had been focused on starting up one business, and so that was a building materials salvage store. So that our focus was on that one business, and it's only been in the past 2 years, past year and a half or so actually, where our focus has shifted, and we have actually decided to really operate as more of a training program or a boot camp for entrepreneurs, cooperative entrepreneurs, to help people who are now coming to us with ideas and to help them launch their own ideas and get them off the ground. So in that stage, you know, we went through one full year of doing cycles of these courses, and now we're poised to launch this again for this year, for 2011, with more partnerships with other community institutions, with academic institutions and business support programs. And we've really been able to bring in a lot more players into this field, people who hadn't thought about supporting worker cooperatives before, but now see it as an opportunity. So what we've got lined up for 2011 is really exciting, and I'm really excited about the direction of things and the support that's out there and the interest that's out there for worker-owned businesses and creating and supporting people who have ideas, who want to do something different in their community and to help make it happen.
Great. Omar, can you tell us what are your visions for making this process you're going through duplicatable? Do you have any plans? If so, what do they look like? How can people learn more about, you know, maybe they're in here in California or they're somewhere else and they, what are your plans for making this process duplicatable?
Well, we are currently in the midst of reviewing, we're currently reviewing the curriculum that we've developed to support our co-op academy in order to make it available to anybody around the country who wants to take this on and to be able to support co-ops in their community. We're not looking to create green worker chapters, but we are looking to build connections with other community groups and people in other parts of the country who want to engage in a similar initiative to be able to launch worker-owned green businesses in communities that really need it. And so our focus is really now to revamp or revise the curriculum that we've got, establish some great partnerships, and then make it available to others who want to take it on and really engage in a network that supports, where we support each other in the use of this curriculum and the, you know, just putting out there what are some of the best practices and creating a community of users that's actually supporting this thing. So that's the direction that we're moving in for this year and for the years after. And it's something that we've come to this over a process of time, and it's been a very organic process for us of getting the word out and building connections with others. And it's been exciting just over the past few years to see that where we were when we started was very much operating by ourselves in our own community, touching bases around the country with a few other actual up-and-running cooperatives and cooperative networks. And now we're seeing, as a result of our efforts, that there's a lot more interest out there, especially amongst groups that are engaged in community development work, that have been hitting their heads against the wall and trying to figure out how do we move beyond this current economy? How do we create institutions that support the local community and businesses that support the local community in a way that's true to our values, that practice democracy and that keep wealth within the community? And so what we're seeing now is more and more groups are looking for that. And so we've been seeing just in the past few years more examples of similar cooperative development initiatives in other parts of the country. In Austin, Texas, there's Third Coast Workers for Cooperation, which recently launched their Cooperative Business Institute, very similar to and partly modeled on Green Worker Cooperatives and our Co-op Academy. And then we've got Evergreen Cooperatives, which is in Cleveland, Ohio, which has gone gangbusters and has really done an amazing job pulling together the resources within their community, within Cleveland, and pulling in major players from foundations, hospitals, major institutions in the community that have actually come together and said, we want to support cooperative development specifically and put their money where their mouth is in order to keep resources in the community and create jobs that actually empower people. And that's amazing. That is absolutely amazing that is happening and that it's happening anywhere. And particularly that it's happening in communities that have been neglected for so long. So those are just some of the promising trends that we're seeing now. And this is in the wake or in the context of cooperatives coming together and in networks and building networks of support amongst each other and saying we're going to build this movement. And what we're seeing now is just a lot of movement building happening throughout the country, tied in with movement building for cooperatives all over the planet, where you have institutions or cooperatives that are reaching out, networks that are supporting each other and building connections and really creating a global network of support for a new kind of economy that has been that many people wish for but just hasn't been realized yet on a grand scale.
Are there any national or international organizations that you have turned to for guidance or ideas? And are there any events coming up at a national level that we can attend, to those of us that have starting up our worker-owned co-ops that you know of?
Absolutely. There is certainly, we would not be where we are today, or green worker cooperatives would not exist the way that we do were it not for our ability to network and connect with cooperatives around the country and with cooperative networks that exist. And there is a national network of worker cooperatives called the U.S. Federation of Worker Cooperatives. Their website is usworker.coop or .coop. anything with a dot co-op now is actually related to cooperatives. So there's actually an extension,
that's
a URL extension for cooperatives. So that's just another sign of how things are moving. But the U.S. Federation of Worker Cooperatives is an important one, and that's a great gateway for anyone who's interested in learning more about cooperatives. They should just go to their website and follow all of the links and be connected there with regional networks all around the country. There are regional networks on the West Coast. There are regional networks on the East Coast. There's a conference somewhere happening every year related to worker co-ops. There's national worker co-op conferences that was held last year. There's everywhere around the country, there's a regional network co-op conference happening this year. So just check out that U.S. Federation website, and people can find the information for themselves and get plugged into what's going on.
Great. Well, in conclusion, and for our listeners listening to, you're listening to Green Livelihood Viviendo Verde Ya, and this is our podcast, and also what we're calling, what did we describe it as?
It's like a time capsule.
We call it an audio time capsule. I was going to ask you to do that, but I just wanted you to answer just one last question for me personally, because I am working with a very, you know, young and disenfranchised population. I'm wondering, Omar, in conclusion, can you tell us, was there something in particular? I know that we are all affected by a lot of people in our lives, a lot of situations and circumstances, but if you could narrow it down to an individual that, you know, in your life that said, wow, this was the person that just really changed it for me, or this was the situation that it just clicked, and I just knew that, versus taking the path of, you know, disparity, I mean, being desperate and giving up, that you said, no, I've got to go to school, I've got to hang in there, and I've got to do this work. Can you share that with us?
God, I wish it were that simple and cut and dry that I could just point to one person, but there have actually been so many people.
Right. No, I understand that, but maybe there's somebody that just kind of stands out there.
Yeah, I've been engaged in social justice struggles and activism and organizing since I was about 15. So, you know, there are lots of community groups and lots of people that have influenced me over the years from a very young age to really stand up for myself and for other people around me and work to create a better world.
Great. Well, thank you very much. And if people want to learn more and find out more about the work you're doing, where can they find you?
Well, everyone should check out our website. The website for Green Worker Cooperatives is www.greenworker.coop. That's greenworker.coop.
Great. Well, Dan, is there anything else on your mind that you want to...
Well, I just want to say thank you very much. Got my mic back on here. I just want to say thank you very much, Omar Freya, for joining us and sharing not only your vision, but also the nuts and bolts of how you got started, how others have gotten started, what's available in the co-op network nationwide. It's been a great educational experience for us. I know, speaking for myself, I won't speak just yet.
No, definitely for
Evelina,
both of us.
But it's been really terrific, and for our listeners. So I appreciate the time that you've taken, Omar, for joining us.
Well, thank you very much for having me on the show. It's been great.
Great. Thank you very much, and hopefully we'll see you at one of those conventions or seminars or something real soon.
Yes, I hope so.
Thank you.